Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here on the radio every Sunday morning on Hawaii Island at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And if you prefer to listen online, we post the podcast online for your listening pleasure at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. When you get there, just click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Today, we're beginning a two-part discussion of our Hawaii state judiciary, which is sort of ironic because federally, the judiciary is now way more much of a topic. But what we're going to do today, first of all, is learn the basics of our court system from Associate Supreme Court Justice Sabrina S. McKenna in a rebroadcast of part of an interview I did with her in 2011, not long after she was appointed to the Supreme Court, and learn some interesting personal facts about Justice McKenna and learn about the Patsy Takemoto Mink Title IX law. After that, we'll segue into a recent interview I recorded with Chief Justice Mark Rechtenwald when he was here on the island not too long ago, where we expand the discussion, talk about some of the issues the courts deal with, and how the Supreme Court of our state really works. And we'll air part of the Chief Justice interview today and then the rest of it next Sunday. Let's join our interview from 2011 when I'm introducing my guest. My guest this morning, and I'm delighted to welcome her to our studio, is Hawaii State Supreme Court Associate Justice Sabrina S. McKenna. Justice McKenna was sworn in on March 3, 2011. She's a graduate of the University of Hawaii at Manoa and a 1982 graduate of the University of Hawaii William S. Richardson School of Law, where she served as editor-in-chief of the Law Review. Justice McKenna was a civil litigator, corporate counsel, and law professor at the UH Richardson School of Law before becoming a Hawaii State Trial Court judge in 1993. As a trial court judge, she presided in district, circuit, and family courts, and she served as senior judge of the family court of the First Circuit. Good morning. Aloha, Justice McKenna.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I thought I'd take advantage of your presence to help us learn more about the court system in Hawaii, starting with, could you give us sort of a description of the Hawaii State Judiciary?
Sure. The Hawaii Judiciary, in terms of the trial courts, we have three levels of trial courts. We have the district courts, the family courts, and the circuit courts. And in terms of appellate courts, we have the Intermediate Court of Appeals and the Hawaii State Supreme Court. The trial courts are divided into four circuits. The First Circuit is basically the island of Oahu. The Second Circuit is Maui County. The Third Circuit is the Big Island. We don't have a Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit actually used to be the Hilo, Hamakua, and Puna districts of the Big Island from 1892 to 1943, but then the Fourth Circuit was merged into the Third Circuit, which is Kau, Kona, and Kohala districts. So as of 1943, the state of Hawaii only has four circuits, and the Fifth Circuit is Kauai County.
Interesting. Uh-huh. It's interesting that there were two circuits here on Hawaii Island and
right,
that changed.
Right. And I'm not quite sure why, but that it did happen in 1943.
Interesting. I guess they didn't think the island is as big as I know that local judges think it is. District court and the circuit court, basically what's the difference between those two kinds of courts? It sounds like family court would be for family matters.
Yes, family court obviously will handle the divorces, the paternities, guardianships of the minors and adults, child welfare cases, in other words, child protective types of cases, and juvenile issues. The district court handles civil and criminal cases, but of limited jurisdiction. For criminal cases, the district court will handle petty misdemeanor and misdemeanor cases. However, if there is a demand for jury trial in a petty misdemeanor or misdemeanor case, that case will go to the circuit court. In civil cases, the district court handles civil cases up to 20,000. Is it still 20,000? I believe it is. A limited jurisdiction and also has exclusive jurisdiction over residential landlord-tenant summary possession cases. The small claims court is a division of the district courts, and currently the jurisdiction is $5,000. Family court and district court are considered trial courts of limited jurisdiction. The circuit courts are considered trial courts of general jurisdiction, which basically can handle all kinds of cases, including jury trials. All jury trials are in circuit courts.
All right. Thank you so much. Now, let's get to the court that you're actually part of. Tell us about the Hawaii Supreme Court. What is the role of our state Supreme Court?
The Hawaii Supreme Court, basically the main function, the main work that we do is hearing appeals that are brought before the court. And appeals can be brought before the court in two ways. First, we can have applications for transfer from the Intermediate Court of Appeals, and that's where one party will ask that the ICA be bypassed and that the Supreme Court directly hear the appeal. Now, it is mandatory for the Supreme Court to accept the transfer if a case is of a fundamental public importance or when it's an appeal from a court or agency regarding a decision that invalidates an amendment to the state constitution or determines that a statute or an ordinance or agency rule was invalidly enacted or is unconstitutional, or if a case involves a sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, then if there is an application for transfer in those situations, the Supreme Court must accept those transfers. Transfer is discretionary if it's a case of first impression or a novel legal question, or if it's a case where there's an inconsistency in the decisions of the Intermediate Appellate Court or of the Supreme Court. So we do get some transfer cases every year, but the bulk of the appeals that we hear are based on writs of certiorari to the ICA, and that is similar to the United States Supreme Court. These are discretionary appeals, and there's about 150 applications for writs of certiorari, and I think we take about 30, 40, 50, something like that a year. And those are cases in which there may be a grave error of law or fact that we believe was committed by the ICA, or if there are inconsistencies, again, between decisions of the ICA and of the Supreme Court or with federal decisions, or inconsistencies between decisions of different ICA panels, because the ICA has six judges. They sit in panels of three, and sometimes one panel may disagree with another panel. That's possible. So if there are situations like that, then we would also accept certiorari in those cases.
What you brought up to me is that you operate in that way just like the federal Supreme Court, where they make a decision as to what cases they will hear. They don't just hear everything that's offered to them.
Exactly.
So that process, then, how does that process work? How do you, as the justices, make that decision as to what you will hear?
Well, all of our applications, all of our filings are now electronically filed. And so we daily can review all the filings in the Supreme Court. So when we see a new application for certiorari coming in, we can review not just the application in which the party states what errors they believe were made or where there may be inconsistent decisions. We can also go online to review all of the appeals, the briefs filed before the ICA. And each justice will conduct an independent review and reach his or her own conclusion as to whether or not he or she believes that the case should be accepted. Now, as the applications are filed, one justice is responsible to do a detailed memorandum to all other justices outlining the procedural and factual background and the law and making that justice's recommendation. However, each justice does reach his or her own conclusion as to whether or not the case should be accepted.
Justice McKenna, do me a favor, define, and I know you did this before, but define the term certiorari.
Yes. You know what? That's a great question. What does that mean in Latin? I can't remember what it means.
I just want to know what it means in English.
Yes. Well, a writ of certiorari, it's the process in which the Supreme Court will accept an appeal from an intermediate court of appeals, and it's the same process for the United States Supreme Court.
Which brings me to, is there a relationship between the Hawaii State Supreme Court and the federal Supreme Court? And if so, what is that relationship?
Well, there is no real direct relationship. Under the United States Constitution, the United States Supreme Court would be the Supreme Court of law of the country. Federal courts are actually courts of limited jurisdiction and hear cases involving the federal constitution or federal law or cases between states or ambassadors or involving United States treaties or they do have exclusive jurisdiction over bankruptcy cases. So federal courts do have limited jurisdiction. The bulk of legal cases in the United States are actually heard by the various state courts. It is possible that a case could be heard either in federal court or in state court. For example, federal courts under law have what we call diversity jurisdiction, and that is if there is a lawsuit between parties of different states, residents of different states, then you can file that lawsuit in federal court. However, that diversity jurisdiction is limited to cases with a value of $75,000 or more. But if a Hawaii resident sues a resident of another state in a state court, which can be done, then the defendant does have the right to remove the case to federal court, and that can also happen. There are cases which will go through a state court system, but if they deal with, for example, a federal constitutional question or a federal law question, it is possible for a party to seek a writ of certiorari from the state Supreme Court directly to the United States Supreme Court, and that has also happened. And the United States Supreme Court will become the final arbiter on the law of the United States of America.
Okay. Justice McKenna, I think there are some other roles of the Supreme Court. Tell us about those.
Sure. In addition to the appeals, the Hawaii Supreme Court can hear certified questions of law from federal courts. For example, if there's a question of Hawaii state law that would be dispositive of a case in federal court.
Dispositive?
In other words, it would decide the outcome of the case one way or the other. Sometimes the federal court will ask the Hawaii Supreme Court to give its opinion on what Hawaii law is on that issue. And the Hawaii Supreme Court can also hear what we call reserved questions of law from the circuit courts or the land court or the tax appeal court. The Hawaii Supreme Court also hears applications for writs, for such as writs of mandamus, which is to require a public official to do something that is required. That is one of their duties under the law. Or writs of habeas corpus. This Hawaii Supreme Court also can hear complaints regarding elections. But one of the really important things that is fairly regularly done is that the Hawaii Supreme Court also makes rules of practice and procedure for all of the state courts. And we also are responsible for licensing and regulating and disciplining all attorneys. And we're also responsible for any discipline of judges.
So basically, the Hawaii Supreme Court is the top dog in the court system. And Chief Justice Rechtenwald, then he's the top guy in the justice system in the state, yeah?
Of course. He is the head of one of the three branches of government, yes.
How many Supreme Court justices are there?
We have five on the Hawaii Supreme Court.
Now, under what circumstances would a justice recuse themselves from a case? And I ask that because we live in a really small state, and you, as, for example, a Supreme Court justice, you probably know almost all the attorneys who come before you. You went to law school here at the University of Hawaii Law School. You had classmates. You even had housemates who are now attorneys and state and local officials. You practice law here with and against many local attorneys, and that's just you. I'm sure the situation is exacerbated when you look at judges who grew up here on this island or any other island. So how does any justice decide to recuse themselves or not?
That's a very good question, and you're absolutely right. Fortunately, we do have some guidance from the Revised Code of Judicial Conduct as well as a Hawaii statute. But basically, under the law, subject to what we call the rule of necessity, and the rule of necessity is basically a rule that says that, for example, if it's a case in which a judge may have a financial interest, for example, perhaps dealing with the retirement system or something like that, that a judge may have a financial interest in the outcome of the case, but so would all judges. So the rule of necessity would say that some judge has to hear it. So if you're the first judge to whom that case is assigned, you still have to hear it. But subject to the rule of necessity, a judge is required to recuse from a case where basically it's a vague standard, but it's something that we grapple with, where a judge's impartiality might reasonably be questioned, including but not limited to situations in which a judge or justice might have a personal bias or prejudice for or against a party or an attorney, or may have personal knowledge of the facts in dispute in the case. In addition, under the code of governing judges, if a judge's spouse or domestic partner or a relative within the third degree of consanguinity or the spouse or domestic partner of such a person is a party, an officer, a director, or a general partner or trustee of a party, or is an attorney for one of the parties, or is a person who has more than a de minimis interest that could be substantially affected, or if such a person is likely to be a witness in the case, then the judge needs to recuse. Or if the judge himself or herself, or as a fiduciary, for example, a judge could be a trustee of the judge's family member's estate, or a judge's spouse or domestic partner or parent or child or member of the judge's household has an economic interest in the outcome of the case, then the judge must recuse. Or if a judge served as a lawyer on that case before or was in association with one of the lawyers in the case, or if a judge served as a government employee and participated personally in that case, or as a public official participated in that case, not as an attorney, but perhaps as a public official, or publicly expressed an opinion on the issues in that case as a public official, then if that person then became a judge, that person would have to recuse.
Justice McKenna, you make it sound like all judges should almost recuse from every case, because here in this state, everybody sort of knows a lot of people and they know a lot about issues. So
yes. Well, okay. So the final thing is if the judge was a witness, you're supposed to recuse. But here's the caveat. The law does provide, and this does happen, that except where you do have a personal bias or prejudice, you can make a disclosure as to all of these other possible relationships or situations. And if the parties choose to waive the issue that's being raised, then the judge can continue to hear the case. And so you will see many situations in which judges will make disclosures. I know this person from law school. I know this person from a bar committee. And in many situations, the parties and the attorneys will say, you know, we want you to continue in the case.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're on the radio on Hawaii Island every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And the interviews are then posted to a podcast that you may listen to anytime. Go to lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com and click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. This week and next, we're talking about the Hawaii State Judiciary. Today, listening to portions of a 2011 interview with Associate Justice Sabrina McKenna, which will continue in a moment, and then we'll segue into a talk story I did with Chief Justice Mark Rechtenwald when he was here on the island recently, and then complete our discussion with him next Sunday morning. So let's get back to our conversation with Associate Justice Sabrina McKenna. Justice McKenna, I'd like to talk a little bit about you.
Sure.
You had a very successful career as an attorney, and you decided you wanted to be a judge. Why did you want to be a judge?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, I was very fortunate to be able to attend undergraduate school here at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. I'm originally from Japan. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I attended DOD schools overseas. But I walked on to the UH basketball team. I was one of the first recipients and beneficiaries of Title IX, and I was given a basketball scholarship.
And tell us what Title IX is.
Title IX, actually, I was reminded I shouldn't call it Title IX. It is actually the Patsy Takemoto Mink Equal Opportunity in Education Act, and it's basically a simple law passed in 1972 by Congress and proposed by the late Congresswoman Patsy Takemoto Mink, which basically says that any educational institution receiving federal funds cannot discriminate on the basis of gender. Now, most people think of this in terms of sports, which meant that colleges and universities would have to have teams for women. But the biggest impact was, of course, in education. For example, as of May of 1972, when Title IX passed, that year, the percentage of U.S. law graduates that were women was only 7%. 1972, the percentage of U.S. medical school graduates that were women was only 9%. And now we're like at 50%. So you can see what a huge impact this law has had on educational equity. And it's not just for the benefit of women. It also benefited men. It was difficult for men to be accepted to nursing school, for example. I remember one of our bailiffs sitting down and talking to him. He had returned from the Vietnam War, and he said he really wanted to be a court reporter, but he couldn't get in. They were only accepting women. It does go both ways. And so this law has been really good for both genders.
And then why did you want to be a judge?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So then I really wanted to stay in Hawaii, and I was really fortunate to be able to go to our local law school, the William S. Richardson School of Law. And, you know, when I went to law school, my tuition was $650 a year. And the people of the state have been so good to me. I really thought that someday, you know, I received this wonderful education through the University of Hawaii system. I really wanted to give back to the community. After law school, I worked for a large firm. I did corporate law. But in 1990, right around the crash of the Berlin Wall, is when I decided it really was time for me to just now go back. I wanted to do public service. My first job was as a law professor, and that was wonderful. And then several years later, I became a judge. It's just been a wonderful career. I'm just so honored to be able to serve in this capacity.
And now you're on the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in our state. What did it mean to you to be nominated by Governor Abercrombie and then confirmed, and now you're a justice?
Well, you know, I was just so thrilled and honored that he nominated me. It's a really humbling experience, and it's just been really exciting. It's so meaningful, but also humbling to think that we, the court, has such awesome responsibility to decide the important legal issues facing our state. So it's a real humbling experience. Obviously, there's a lot of mutual respect between the justices. It's a great place to work.
Justice McKenna, you're the only justice to have actually graduated from our own local law school, the Richardson School of Law. And I'm wondering if you think that might inform your decisions in some different way, or what implications that might have, since you're the first locally trained justice on the Hawaii Supreme Court.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. Obviously, the local law school, just as any other mainland law school, has certain core subjects that we all cover and we all study. Not being from Hawaii, I really wanted to go to the local law school because I wanted to get to know the legal community in Hawaii, as well as to learn more about the development of Hawaii law. And it's true, with attending Richardson, I was able to take courses such as Native Hawaiian rights, which I believe are not offered in any other law schools. And also to be able to, you know, examine the differences between Hawaii law and the law of other jurisdictions, or also to study a little bit more about the development of Hawaii law as it fits into the history of Hawaii. But more importantly than that, I'm so honored to have been able to attend a law school which is just permeated with the aloha spirit. And it was a wonderful place to study.
Justice McKenna, you mentioned you were born in Tokyo. When did you move to Hawaii?
I came to Hawaii to enter the University of Hawaii at Manoa as a freshman in 1974.
Oh, fabulous.
Yes.
All right. Justice Sabrina McKenna, we're at the end of our time together. What haven't I asked you about that you'd like to comment on before we say aloha?
Well, I'm just really honored to be here, and I thank all the people of the Big Island for taking interest in the judiciary. As you know, the judiciary is one of the three co-equal branches of government, and we in the Hawaii judiciary do our best to serve the people of this state fairly and to provide justice for all. So thank you so much for your interest in the judiciary, and I do look forward to the development and construction of our new courthouse here in Kona.
And one final question, for those young people who might have an interest in a career as an attorney or maybe even a judge, talk briefly about how it is as a career.
Oh, you know, it's so funny. I have to tell you that as a young high school student, I did not consider myself going into law. I mean, I didn't grow up knowing lawyers or anything like that. But if you do consider a career in law, do not think that you just have to focus on law. Expand your horizons, because good lawyers need to be good people, and good judges need to have a broad perspective. So do not think that you only need to focus on law classes. Do a lot of reading and expand your horizons.
Very good. Thank you so much, Justice Sabrina McKenna. We are really honored to have you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now we're going to segue to my talk story with Chief Justice Mark Rechtenwald. He was on Hawaii Island several weeks ago. Here's the first part of our interview. The balance will air next Sunday morning. Chief Justice Rechtenwald was sworn in as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in 2010. He joined the Supreme Court as an Associate Justice in 2009 and previously served as Chief Judge of the Intermediate Court of Appeals. Prior to that, he was head of the State Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs and also served as a United States attorney here in the state after serving as an attorney in private practice. Chief Justice Rechtenwald's undergraduate degree is from Harvard University and his law degree from the University of Chicago. And Chief Justice actually has a background in journalism. He worked as a reporter in the United Press International's Honolulu Bureau, and I found out just minutes ago that Chief Justice Mark Rechtenwald worked as a reporter at West Hawaii Today for a time. Good morning, aloha, Chief Justice.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you doing? Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, I'm really glad you're here, but I'm sort of intrigued. You actually worked for West Hawaii Today?
Well, I came over and filled in. I think it was for about 4 weeks. Someone was on vacation. They needed somebody to fill in for that spot, and I had the opportunity to come over here and cover some different events, some sporting events, and other things that were going on around the community. It was great. It was a great way to learn a little bit about the west side of the island.
Well, you know, I read something that you told KGMB that you thought writing in journalism really helped you in your law career. And I'm curious about that. And one of the reasons is our former mayor, Billy Kanoi, mentioned he's going to be teaching administration of justice at the community college level. But he said, my emphasis is on helping people learn to write well. So clearly you lawyers like writing. So tell us more about writing and why folks should pay attention.
Well, I think the ability to communicate is crucial in any profession. And whatever you're doing, the ability to talk to your customers, talk to the clients, talk to the people you serve or work with is critical. So for me, as an appellate judge, a lot of what I do is issue written opinions. So we typically hear a case, review all the record, and then go back and write up opinions that in detail explain why we're ruling in a particular way. So the ability to write clearly and concisely and to explain why certain things are being done or what our analysis is really the way that we're accountable to the public. And so it's a critical part of my job. And again, having the opportunity to write as a journalist really forced me to write clearly and write concisely. At least I like to think it did.
Where were you raised, Chief Justice, and what brought you to Hawaii?
Well, I actually grew up in the Chicago area, suburban Chicago, went to school on the East Coast and had worked in Washington, D.C. for a while. I came out here in 1980. I was working on a presidential campaign for a person named John Anderson. He was running as an independent against Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter. And the campaign sent me here to put on some events for a week or so. I came, and once the events were over, I went back to the mainland. And when the campaign was over, John Anderson wasn't elected president, so I had some decisions to make about where I wanted to go in my life. I decided to come back to Hawaii just to visit because I thought it was such a beautiful place, and something about it really struck a chord in me. And the next thing I knew, I got a job at the legislature, and I've been here ever since, and it's home for me now.
Why did you want to be a judge? And then talk to us about what the career path would be for any young people who may wish to pursue a similar career.
Well, I think it's all about public service. And, you know, as somebody who's a lawyer, I think the ability to decide cases in a way that's fair and impartial is the foundation of our judicial system and in some ways the foundation of our democracy. So I think that's something that's tremendously important in our society. And that's one thing that, as a practicing attorney, I thought would be something, a place where I could contribute to our community if I were a judge. And the other thing I think that people don't realize is that our court systems do so much more besides deciding cases, which absolutely is our core, and that's what we do day in and day out. But we really have a role in solving the underlying problems that are bringing those cases into the court system and trying to alleviate some of the impacts that arise from them. So whether it's drug abuse, domestic violence, even divorce and the effect that that can have on children, we're trying to, in the case of divorce, trying to help those kids through a very difficult situation. In the case of drug abuse, we're trying to find ways to ensure that the defendants who are coming before the court are going to come out clean and sober and stay that way so they don't reoffend, which after all is what it's all about, is keeping the community safe. So there are a lot of ways that a judge can lead and bring people together to make the community a better place.
It's interesting. You talk about the court's role in, for example, helping solve drug abuse problems. And as we record this, we're sitting in the chambers of Judge Ronald Ibarra, who is a huge advocate of drug court and started the drug court program here on Hawaii Island. So I didn't realize it was such a universal thing for the judiciary to look at the whole scope of problems and issues that bring people into your system.
And I think, you know, drug court is a great example. And really what we've done, with regard to drug abuse is sort of have a series of steps and series of tools that we can use to try to change people's behavior. And one of the really exciting innovations here in Hawaii has been something called Hope Probation, which is a program that was started on Oahu, but we have it here on the Big Island now. And the premise of Hope Probation is when somebody goes on probation, which means they're out in the community but still under the supervision of the court, and they have a drug problem, they'll be subject to drug testing. And if they test positive for drugs or if they fail to show up for their drug tests, they'll be held immediately accountable. They'll be taken into custody immediately, and they'll do at least some jail time. It might be just a couple of days, but there'll be an immediate, swift, sure consequence for what they've done. And what we found is that program for many, many people who have drug abuse problems can really make a difference in their behavior, can really reduce recidivism and reduce the use of drugs among folks who are in that program. But for some, they need much more intensive supervision, and that's what drug court does. It's a team approach. Those folks are in front of the judge and meeting with their treatment team, their probation officers and drug counselors and others on a very regular basis, and we're doing everything we can to get them back on track and change their approach to their lives. And then the next step ultimately is prison. And in some cases, folks are just unable to get their problems under control. They continue to recidivate and they have to go to prison. So we have this various level of tools that we can employ to try to change somebody's behavior of someone who's got a drug problem.
What are the responsibilities of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in the state of Hawaii?
Well, I have really two roles. One is I'm a member of the court, and so we hear all of the appellate cases that come up through the system where the court of last resort in the state of Hawaii. So I'm one of five members of that court. So I, as every one of the other five members does, I review cases, write opinions, and decide whether to join in or dissent from my fellow justices' opinions. I'm also responsible for leading that court and administering that court on a day-to-day basis. And then I'm responsible for administering the judiciary as a whole. So we have about 1,900 employees, about 82 judges statewide, a budget of about $160 million. So all the aspects of leading that organization, whether it be budget, whether it be how we spend our money, what our programs are, interacting with the legislature, representing the organization in front of the community, every aspect of what we do, I'm ultimately accountable for.
And in your spare time?
I try to run and swim a little bit just to keep in shape. But, you know, for me, it's also all about my family. So pretty much any spare time I have, I try to spend with my family.
I was sort of joking about spare time. It doesn't sound like you have much.
And with that, we're going to take a pause in our conversation with Hawaii State Supreme Court Chief Justice Mark Rechtenwald and pick it up next Sunday morning. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken, and I'll see you next Sunday for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.